Most part coming from Cordova, that is, there is no road in. That's, it must be about 80 miles from Cordova. 50 of which are already constructed.
Right.
Are there any other questions in the northern region? Yes, Representative Brown.
And the other expansion proposals in the northern region highways are Dalton Highway to Bettles and Eureka Rampart Road preliminary engineering. Is that correct?
Yes.
Are there any others?
In northern region? Chairman, I believe that's it.
I do have a question on the Bettles. What are you going to do there exactly? And also the Eureka Rampart Road construction.
The Bettles, we would be looking at an alignment and the cost and feasibility of a road connection to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And Eureka Rampart is basically the same thing, most likely along the alignment of the existing winter road.
Okay, what are your reasons for that? Because I know that in Bettles, there, it's a very small community.
It's also being used as the basically the jumping off point and the headquarters for the park there. And, the park? Federal Park.
Scratch that one, huh?
I see some movement with that pen there.
They probably much for the head. Okay, any other questions?
Yes.
Representative Coconut.
Alaska Highway, new section, there were some rather bad collapses. Is that going to be taken, repaired as part of the original construction contract?
What section is that?
Oh, if you come from the border heading toward Tope in the new cuts, some of the fill area there. Essentially, have one lane right along the yellow line.
Yeah, it's slider.
That's slider.
I think
yeah,
that
it's going to be taken care of this year.
That's right.
But since the road is, you know, I don't know if the contract's completed. I didn't see anything in this pertaining to that, but I presume you're going to do some reconstruction there. How's that covered?
Both sides of the hill. That's right.
Yeah, the three of us
right.
Are familiar with that.
Yeah.
Actually, the four of us.
I'd have to get back to you on just what the schedule is for the repair.
Right. It seems to be permafrost thaw.
What it looked like.
Took out a large area of fill.
That was one of those areas where very deep fill was done in the project that was performed two summers ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Actually, three.
Yeah, we knew on that project that there is in some of those areas virtually no practical way to construct across some of those frozen soils where you're not going to have a significant movement, particularly in the first year to 3 years after you put that much additional fill on top of the ground. Our assumption is once that happens and you go back and re-level it, you should have taken care of most of the problem. Time to fill.
I just didn't see it listed. Yet. I'm not sure what.
The guardrails are sort of.
Any other questions on the Northern Region Federal Highway Program? We're into Northern Region Federal Aviation. Representative Phillips.
If you don't mind getting into your territory, I have a question on Philomena, the airport, and I know it's not on here, but it just sparked a thought.
Philomena.
Yeah, the dump's right at the end of the airstrip there.
Representative Phillips, the whole village needs to be relocated. Yes, it needs to be. That's why we were looking at erosion, the Army Corps of Engineers grants line, because that's where it could fit.
Oh, is it going to be moved?
Well, that it has to be moved. It's a question of, is it going to, it has to be.
Well, I know, the ocean's going to take it over.
It's going to be moved.
Okay, Northern Region Federal Aviation Program. Are there any questions on the aviation?
I do have a question on my hands.
If there's no questions, Representative Sharp, sorry, I was really
okay.
Representative Sharp?
Thank you. Yeah, just a point of information, maybe you could give me on the smaller airports that are the federal funds apply here to all of the 45 million in the Northern Region. What's the limitation, other than the Fairbanks Anchorage, which has their own international airport funding source? Does every other airport in the state qualify, or do they have to be certified airports, or kind of, what are we looking at?
They don't have to be certified airports, and almost every airport in the state qualifies, including the Anchorage and Fairbanks International, which also earn and qualify for federal aviation improvement program dollars. There are a couple of airports that somehow fall out of the system, but generally you have to be eligible to be, what's the national system called? NIPIUS, yes, we don't know what it means.
Okay.
Basically, it is a federal system which says that it serves enough of a significance to be put in this federal system of interconnected airport systems, but that's not a difficult test.
Like mail service?
Yes. Mail service would definitely pass. Okay. The aviation program, though, once you get qualified, is more complicated than the highway program. There are different categories of funding depending upon when the airport was brought into the system, how many people use it in a given year, and some things like that. And the money cannot be moved between those categories. So depending on which category the airport falls into, it is more or less difficult to qualify for funding.
Our favorite town?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The airport was just fine. It must be the
Would you home. Continue with the Northern Region's barrier-free program? Any questions on that?
We just did that.
Just go through there from there.
I think we went through that, didn't we?
Pardon?
The barrier-free?
Well, they have it by region. Yes, they do have it by region.
Oh, I see. Okay, mm-hmm. I see.
I guess my question would be, Madam Chair, how these lists of projects that you have in this region, as well as the one we looked at earlier, fit into the assessment that we're talking about doing?
Madam Chair, Representative Brown, basically the projects which we have in this year's barrier-free, the capital part where we're actually doing some improvements, are based upon the list that we've developed over the last several years working with the community advocacy groups, and do not reflect anything we have yet to learn about ADA. So they're all basically, and I think it's true to say that if they were a high priority accessibility improvement of the old rules, they still will be under ADA.
Okay. Would you continue, please?
Certainly. After that, there's an appropriation for Northern Region Deferred Maintenance. It is similar in purpose to the Central Region, broken down into four allocations. One for all modes except airports for each of the districts, representing the way our budget is broken down, and then one region-wide for airports only. Northern Region has a great number of airports. The item after that, Shishmaref erosion control, $90,000. A fairly long-standing problem of erosion on the spit there. There was some erosion work done a number of years ago, and a lot of that has come apart in storms. The a larger fix is in the million or so dollar range, and this is a fairly small repair, which we think will put back in place some of the erosion control that was there before, and at least slow down the level of erosion to the community here.
Couldn't you get some funds out of the Army Corps of Engineers grants?
Believe the Army Corps has looked at it, and for one reason or another has found it not to be eligible for the program.
And you don't have any federal dollars available for?
Not for erosion control.
Okay. Are there any questions on the Southeast Region Federal Highway Program?
I had a couple.
Representative Phillips.
This is more for my personal education. When you on line 17, North Douglas Highway, the question is, how do you evaluate? I think the road's in pretty good shape compared to some of what I have to drive over back home.
It's a PMS.
Well, how do you evaluate it? I mean, what criteria do you use to say this road needs to be? Is this a resurfacing job?
Essentially, it is that all of our projects are rated. We have it also widens the shoulders.
Right.
There's a lot of cars parked on problems on driveways. All of our projects go through a rating system, a numerical evaluation. It's 100 points, 10 questions. They have to do with safety, capacity, standard or substandard, economic development spinoffs, all those kinds of things, and they all get a numerical rating. And those that get the higher numbers rise to the top. I'm not familiar enough with the particular rating on this project or the real problems that have driven it.
I would suspect capacity is probably a big factor.
I know it has an awful lot of driveways, an awful lot of pedestrian use, and very narrow shoulders. I suspect it's substandard by any traffic analysis that's been done.
But the road surface itself is in pretty good shape. But what I'm used to driving over. On Haynes Highway, the reason this comes up, I just came over the weekend, and on the Canadian side, you have when they plow the snow, it's real wide, you get the American Customs, and all of a sudden you go like that. Why is that in the maintenance? Same terrain, only a few hundred feet difference, and all of a sudden.
Part of the reason is that the Canadian side has been reconstructed with about $7 million of U.S. funds over the last 6 or 8 years. And the road in any time of the year kind of gives you that same impression. It's a much smoother, straighter, more drivable surface. The steepness, well, part of it is also the climatic change that you find as you come across that ridge. You get the wetter, heavier snow. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that the road is narrower. There aren't the shoulders and space to move the snow off of. Like whether they spend more or on their maintenance or not, I don't know.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. Page 19, line 26, Juneau Access Route Preliminary Engineering. That's one of the expansions, correct?
Yes, it is. That's federal funds, which will continue a project started with state general funds. 2 years ago, I believe, we called Juneau Access. They're evaluating enhanced ferry access, a road up Lynn Canal, and a road
road up to Toxwood River. There may be a couple other options. I think there's some number of Lynn Canal options. And a no-build option, and they look at all those. The emphasis at the moment is to bring the Toxwood River option up to the same level of understanding and knowledge and information that the other routes have, and to come to some conclusion about that. This also would include engineering work to begin the preferred alternative if one is selected and agreed to.
How much is needed to just do the assessment?
Less than half, but I can't give you a good number off the top of my head.
Any further questions on the Southeast Region Federal Highway? If not, let's go to the Southeast Region Federal Aviation Program. Any questions on the Southeast Region? If there's no questions, then let's move to the Southeast Region facilities, and these are primarily general funds.
Public safety building?
Yes, okay, basically that's the... A single barrier-free project in Central Region. Central and Southeast.
Is that near the museum?
Yes, right across
the street. That building, yeah, that's in bad shape.
The next item there, deferred maintenance, 910,000 general funds, is analogous to the other region deferred maintenance appropriations that we've talked about. Previously, it is for highways, airports, and harbors.
Okay, then we're into the Alaska International Airport System. Again, my question would be on the environmental, on lines 22 and 23, page 21. I wonder if the department has looked at this again for 470 funds.
Madam Chair, I believe this is eligible for federal funds and
airport program receipts.
And we haven't really thought about 470 funds.
Okay, would you think about them?
We don't care where they come from.
I know, I don't think about it. Create a monster here.
Are there any questions in the Anchorage International Airport System?
I have a curiosity question.
Yes, Representative Phillips.
Page 22, line 8, FAA sign system compliant. What's that mean?
I believe those are the runway signs.
Oh,
The signs the pilots use.
Right.
There have been some
changes.
Some
have been knocked down. Okay.
There have been some changes in how they need to be configured, and what the standard for size and lighting is, and they have to be reconstructed to meet that standard.
Okay, going. Any further questions in the Anchorage International? If not, then let's look at the Fairbanks International Airport. Any questions on that?
Marine Highway System.
Okay, we can start with the Marine Highway System. Representative Ulmer.
Why are we replacing the Ketchikan Terminal?
This is the ticket office portion of that. That structure is quite old. Have you been in that?
I have been in it, and that's why, I mean, it doesn't seem that bad to me. I was just curious if there was some serious structural problem or what.
It's too small. It can't accommodate all the people, particularly if we can now have two vessels in there, and it's just way overtaxed. People are basically standing outside in the rain.
This is what the previous federal highway program.
Maybe I've never been there at the right time or something.
We did not assume this was federal aid eligible under the new program. We have been talking to them, and this is a project that, in fact, the Marine Highways had requested general funds for this, and after the new federal act came out, we changed this to a federal-funded terminal project.
So are you going to get rid of the old one? Just tear it down, or are you going to expand it, or what are you going to do?
I think it gets totally replaced. Demolished.
Okay, any other questions on the Marine Highway system?
Does it really cost any budget?
Then we'll go to the new vessel design. Would you please talk a little bit about that?
The new vessel is a replacement vessel for the Malaspina. We're confronted with making a major investment in that ship, which is a lot of asbestos in it and greatly increases the cost of any remodeling or renovation, and it needs a fair amount of. This vessel would be an ocean-going vessel. Right now, we only have one of those. That's the Tustamina. When it's out of service, the communities which only can serve go without service. So by making this vessel an ocean-going vessel, which can also serve all the different dock structures in the system, it gives a lot of versatility to what we can do with the fleet, and will allow us, particularly in our winter program, where we put vessels in overhaul, to be able to actually increase the level of service we provide.
And your amendment?
The amendment, I guess maybe we felt the 75 was a good source, because this amendment, which increases this 600,000 to 8.1 million, if you will, accounts for the front section of the appropriation bill, which now has a $7.5 million going into the Marine Highway Vessel Replacement Fund. And this is the appropriation out of the Vessel Replacement Fund in order to be able to use it for the actual vessel design.
So you would like for us to consider and construct it and increase the amount?
Yes, it's a slightly different title.
Yes, Representative Omer,
where is that amendment?
It was passed out yesterday from Cheryl Frasca.
Part of the big package?
Yes.
Okay, I just didn't see
it. Look at the other one. Maybe that's the one. Doesn't look like that's the one. There was another one by Cheryl Frasca, and it's on the second page of her letter.
Thank you.
Also been one for a change, an item for the Haynes Uplands improvements.
Is that a new project altogether?
It's a new capital budget request. There's a projection of additional costs on that project. There was an appropriation in the previous year.
And what is this uplands improvement for?
Basically at the Haynes terminal area. It's going to modify and expand the staging area, basically the parking, separate the traffic, hopefully to get the parked vehicles off of the roadway and onto a loading area for the marine vessel.
And these would be federal receipts?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Brown.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand what you're doing. Are you trying to substitute the, well, right now on page 23 at line 20, that new vessel design, what is the source of that other, that 600,000 other?
Vessel replacement fund.
Vessel replacement fund.
This basically entitles that, increases the amount to account for the $7.5 million that's going into the vessel replacement fund from the oil fund.
Okay.
This is just the appropriation out of the vessel replacement fund to allow it to be spent for a vessel.
And then the state emergency operations communications, the next item in this amendment from Cheryl Carrasco, where does that go?
I think that's perhaps another agency.
Which one are you talking about?
Well, I wonder if that isn't the same one for the $2 million that we talked about in your agency.
Oh, no, that's Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Right,
and yes, they did talk about the same thing. It's sort of like a
It's also for $2 million, the one on page 11 at line 9.
Yes, DEC, who was it? Military and Veterans Affairs and then DOT. The Emergency Communication Center, it's also in Military and Veterans Affairs. So, okay.
I think that Military Affairs one is for a different purpose, maybe a similar amount, but it's not for communications along the road system.
It's for emergency communications to hook up from the satellite to an antenna.
Central location, I believe, as opposed to making vehicular communications possible. But I have not seen, I've just heard it described.
Okay. Oh, Representative Brown, did it answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Any Representative Sharp?
Just a question on line 21, 22 on page 23. Alaska Marine Highway System Improvements and Overhaul, $4.5 million. Is that primarily vessels and not structures?
It's primarily vessels. There could be some dock work done as part of that, but it is essentially the vessel overhaul program and fixing major components of the vessels on an annual basis.
Okay.
Last year's operating budget moved some of those costs from the operating budget into the capital budget last year.
About $3.25 million.
Yes, Representative Brown.
The new federal act was supposed to give us more flexibility to spend federal highway dollars on trails, transit, and pedestrian access and so forth, and I just don't see very much in here. I don't see any trails and pedestrian stuff in here. Why not? Why aren't we seeing some of that show up here in this proposal?
I think the real reason is timing. We didn't get to read the act until, you know, Christmas time. It is a major departure. Our average project time takes 3 to 8 years from beginning to completion, and it's simply going to take us identifying those newly eligible projects principally over this next summer, this next cycle of our six-year program, before they get into the plan. Basically, what you see before us is the fruits of the program the way it used to work, with a few exceptions, things which were already in the works. The Ketchikan Ferry Passenger Terminal was a project that was already being looked at as a general funded project, was eligible, and so it was an easy one to add, which you wouldn't have seen without the new act. But I think it's simply a matter of it takes some time for those things to be identified and to get into the in our program. We're starting from zero. It's going to take us a little while to get there.
I have one more, Madam Chair. As we were going through, I identified four of the expansion proposals. Can you tell me what the other four are?
I think we saw Whittier and Juneau, Rampart, Bettles, Cordova, the new ferry, we list amongst those.
Dalton Highway?
Preliminary engineering work? No, the Bettles.
Whittier, Rampart, Cordova, Dalton, Juneau.
Bettles.
Well, Dalton, that's Dalton to Bettles.
Okay, Dalton.
Five.
Eureka, Rampart.
Eureka, Rampart.
Counted that one.
Whittier.
Counted that one.
Juneau.
Counted that one.
Copper River.
Okay, can you just provide the list? Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Brown?
That's it.
Good, thank you very much. Then next we'll go to Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Brian, is Chinita contaminated site clean? That should be under the Exxon gas field bill. That's the area that's lost it.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it.
But I think it is. And we start on page 24, lines 14. Line 14.
Madam Chair, did you want a brief description of each of the projects, or should you just entertain questions, or how would you like to proceed?
Just go through item by item. Okay. Very brief description, except for just on the new Chinita. Is that near the Exxon spill? And is that the reason why this contaminated site is presented here?
I believe that this is being presented because of the possibility of this money is going to be used for asbestos removal and also soil contamination.
Mm-hmm.
The money would be used for a preliminary estimate of determining to develop a complete remediation plan.
Mm-hmm.
The idea would be that after completion of the plan, that we would be able to determine a comprehensive cost estimate for asbestos removal, removal of remaining bunker sea oil in the abandoned tanks, and to provide a cost breakdown of potential remedial options for the site. We have a contractor who will assess the extent of petroleum contaminated soils by grid sampling the soils in the vicinity of the tank farms. The $30,000, $10,000 would be for the cost. It's a cost estimate for the removal of hazardous substances, and $20,000 for soil sampling.
For the record, would you please identify who you are?
I'm Ramon Henderson, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and I have with me Michael Cushing with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs also.
Madam Chair.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. So your agency owns this, and that's why are you involved in this particular one?
This site has been placed. It's in our MLT program in trust, and it's administered
MLT.
By the Municipal Land Trust Program.
Thank you.
Okay, can you continue, please?
The next item on line 17 is the fish tax sharing computer system program purchase. This item is being requested as a result of legislation that was passed last year that requires or entitles municipalities to receive 50% of the tax revenues collected for
fish outside the municipal boundaries. This money would be used for purchase of a AutoCAD computer system, as well as paying for the professional services to develop the software application for determining the geographical information that's necessary to operate this program. And the expert on the program happens to be right here with me if you have any additional questions.
Did this go through the DOA review?
Yes, it did. It was approved by that committee. Okay.
Any questions on this? Representative Brown?
I guess I'm curious why you're going to use AutoCAD, since that's not generally the GIS of choice. I'm just concerned about proliferating and incompatible GISs throughout state government. This looks like another new one on a different system.
Madam Chair, we'll be using ARC Info System, the same as DNR and Christian Bay Labor, basically running on a SunSpark workstation. So we've worked with several of the other agencies just to that end to try to achieve the compatibility.
So what was the reference to AutoCAD?
Looks like you've changed the, they've done some further investigation on the system since the time the document was prepared in identifying what system they'd use. Right.
Yes.
Okay, any questions, any further questions? Come on.
The next item, line 18, community aerial photo base maps development. Essentially, this is money to be used for community profile maps that the department has historically prepared over the years. Apparently, this is the most requested document that the department produces. It provides community profile information on the economy, just about everything within the community, land status, geologic processes, soils and vegetation, natural resources, primarily anything that transportation, all the information that one would need to know about a community in terms of economic development, anything about the community. As I stated, this is one of the most used, widely used documents that the department prepares. The theory is at this point in time that what we anticipate doing is, previously these have been prepared and they have been distributed at no cost. We intend to start charging for the production of these community profiles.
Any questions, Representative Brown?
Have you developed any system for filing and making available to the public these photos when they're gathered? Because I've heard horror stories about this effort that we just keep taking these same photographs over and over and they seem to get lost and we don't have a central filing system. DOT is taking the same stuff. We don't have a statewide system that all the departments can utilize for keeping track of these photos.
Madam Chair, Representative Brown, I can't answer the question on a statewide basis, but for the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, it's very well organized. And if there are, if my understanding is that the point right now is that we are out of these maps in many communities, and that in order for a community to get a copy of it, that we have to come in and make Xerox copies of these of the maps. As far as being unorganized, there may be, and you may be correct in that, there may not be a consolidated statewide effort as far in terms of land.
Well, are you taking aerial photos with this project or using photos that have already been taken or what?
No, I believe that we are taking aerial photos.
If aerial photos are available, we would use those. Basically, we contract these out with that stipulation. And then we own those aerial photos at the end of the project. And those are coordinated within the state, within our department by our mapping people. But it's not coordinated, as far as I know, with any other statewide operation that you're referring to.
And I know that there are at least two other agencies taking the very same photos of probably the very same areas. DNR and DOT.
Any other questions?
The next item, then, line 20, the Supplemental Housing Development Fund, $7.2 million. These funds are used to match federal dollars for the that are provided to the regional housing authorities for low-income housing in rural Alaska. The $7.2 million would, I think, bring in a neighborhood of $35 million in federal funds.
Okay, $1 million was cut from the requested amount and by the governor, and what would that, what type of impact do you see on that?
Madam Chair, you're correct. There was a $1 million cut. I think that the impact was that there'd be about approximately 54 less homes that would be built as a result of that.
Pardon?
54 homes less.
And what is the loss of federal funds?
Let me document on that. Approximately $5 million lost in federal funds.
Yes, Representative Ulmer.
One thought that comes to mind is seeing that these are general fund dollars. If the new housing reorganization bill, the mega bill, is it 152?
Mm-hmm.
House
yes.
Bill 152 goes through. I'm wondering if we still need to do this because HFC has excess reserves which can be used for housing. No, case saying no.
We do need to do this, Madam Chair. We could change the funding source to be AHFC receipts, and that is, in fact, the expectation. There's a fiscal note going on the bill that does that.
Okay. I think that's a better option than general fund dollars if the money's there. So I think we ought to change the funding source on this.
Would you please continue?
Are there any other questions on supplemental housing? If not, moving on to the HUD Home program, federal grant. These are, as identified, this is a request for federal funds. It's for the Home Investment Partnership Program, which is a part of the National Affordable Housing Act. Purpose of the home program to expand supply of affordable low-income and moderate housing in Alaska. The home program would follow the Comprehensive Housing Affordability Strategy, which is a CHAZ that was developed by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, DCRA, Mental Health, and Alaska Association of Housing Authorities. So this is entirely federal funds.
Any questions?
Next item is the request for community development block grants, line 22. This also is a request for federal authority. This money is used for the two block grant programs within the department, the community development block grant program and the community services block grant program. The community development block grant program, as you know, is used in conjunction with the Rural Development Assistance Program and used for our ready projects, economic development, as well as community development projects. The community services block grant money is provided to the Rural CAP organization. The next item, request for economic development and energy efficiency, $1.8 million in federal funds and $1.8 million in general funds. This money would essentially be used for the low-income weatherization program. Department administers, I know that you're all familiar with that particular program, but essentially the program goes through the energy efficiency requirements of various homes to reduce the oil, the price of energy, of heating the home, reduction of approximately 25%. Combination of federal funds and general funds used to administer this program.
Any further questions? Thank you, Ramon.
So can I go back and report that these were all approved?
Madam Chair, Representative Brown.
The energy efficiency 1.8, that would also be AHFC receipts under the merger. Is that how we resolve that?
I would assume that you could fund that like that and use the AHFC receipts for that. I haven't looked at that part of the bill to see if that's what the plan is, but if the bill does pass, the energy portion within our department goes along with that bill. So you could look at that.
Administration of Justice, Department of Corrections.
Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Corrections, and I have with me Kathy Christie, who is our facilities planner, wrong department, facilities planner, who works on the capital budget, who has prepared a brief presentation for you for today.
We have a handout for you that has more detail on our capital projects. I don't know if that's been distributed. Our first request is for $1.5 million, and that's to reduce our deferred maintenance backlog for repair and replacement of worn-out built facility components, and to renovate facilities to support our programs and acquire capital equipment. It's actually a combination of four requests. The Department of Corrections maintains over $1 million square feet of buildings valued at over $300 million. Using the state facility administrator's formula to determine the renewal and replacement requirement, Department of Corrections requires $2.8 million annually to keep our buildings in serviceable condition. The department has identified a total of $5.3 million in these four categories. That is provided in your handout with a description of those projects. The 1.5 represents our highest priority projects. It's a representative list, and we do require flexibility to adjust the allocations between projects. A number of our systems components are nearing failure point, and if the condition worsens during the year, we need to change our priorities. The other request,
Representative Ullman, just one question on this list. Could you describe to us what dust collection means? I see that in several places, and I'm just curious what that is.
In regard to Yukon Kuskokwim, it's for their hobby craft area. They have no dust collection. They do a lot of woodworking, particularly ivory, which creates a very obnoxious odor that right now is spreading throughout the institution. It's similar to the smell of, you know, burning hair and bones, and it's also dust involved with that. So that would contain the dust and collect it in a central point. Lemon Creek, we have dust collection there, and that is for the maintenance shops, which is primarily related to woodworking. They also have a problem in the hobby craft. The next project is $1.35 million, and that will enable us to begin implementation of our master plan recommendations and to improve parity for female inmates. The funds will be used at Meadow Creek to provide additional program space, provide better parity of programming for female offenders in the system. It'll be used at Lemon Creek for double bunking of the modular units, and that will involve moving inmates from areas that are currently dormitories. And the vacated space will be used for improved program space, which is deficient at Lemon Creek. And we will be able to relocate the existing women's unit within the Lemon Creek facility and provide more space and be closer to compliance with ACA standards and provide a more adequate medical space, which is quite deficient at Lemon Creek. Fairbanks is similar in that we would be double bunking the wings, but they are a lower security than would be required for the inmates that would be relocated, so we must upgrade that. And again, the vacated dorm space would be used for program space. And the Fairbanks medical area, by our master plan evaluation, is really adequate to serve 64 inmates, so it needs to be expanded. Again, this is a representative list as the capital budget supports facility operations. The allocations may need to be adjusted after the finalization of our operating budget. The department's priority will be for projects that provide the support the greatest operational savings and provide adequate institutional security.
Representative Copeland.
Yes, looking at the Tennessee newspaper, that they report that Wildwood was going to move people out of Wildwood and repair and upgrade the facility. These are the funds for doing the upgrade one, or does this fit in with that program?
Madam Chair, Representative Kilpinen, Wildwood is not represented in this particular list. We feel we have another funding source that we have located to do that renovation and repair. If you would like, we can describe that to you at this time.
Yes, sir. I'm Representative Navarro.
We are in the process of working with the state bond committee to acquire the Wildwood site through lease, to convert the lease purchase into lease purchase financing, I believe is the term they use. Currently the state is leasing the facility at about $600,000 a year, and that money would be converted towards payment of a bond. And they are willing to increase that amount to cover some of the capital costs for upgrading Wildwood.
How much would you increase it if you go to a lease purchase rather than a lease and include the capital cost?
That's essentially what we're doing. We're requesting that the total package would be $10.7 million.
How much, right now you said the lease costs are $600,000 a year?
Right.
So if you do that, how much would the total lease purchase cost be on an annual basis?
The debt, I'm not announcing on that, would, I believe, be about $900,000.
Yes, Representative Brown. Thank you. With regard to the master plan implementation, there's one short page in the backup here, and it sounds like that I'm aware that the plan is in flux and changing, but this appears not to be an accurate description of what I understand the plan to be at this time. I understand that it has changed since it left the House and that a new plan has been presented to the Senate with respect to 6th Avenue, whether it would be closed and so forth. Do you have an up-to-date statement of what would be done with this money? I mean, is this it? Madam Chair, Representative Brown, as Kathy has indicated, this is a representative list, and we feel, as far as the repair and renovation is concerned, in even the locations that we would be making some adjustments in terms of double bunking or in terms of closing down a wing, we would still need renovation and repair dollars. In terms of the master plan implementation, Kathy had met with the master planner, I believe, last week with Dick Franklin, and we are expecting a report out within the next 3 to 4 weeks on a preliminary basis. Is that, is that correct?
Yeah, and this is compatible with the plan, and it's also compatible with our operating budget submissions in that the double bunking of both Lemon Creek and Fairbanks would enable us to eliminate at least one post at Fairbanks, possibly two at Lemon Creek. And so these modifications are necessary to be able to affect the operations savings.
The one I'm specifically referring to is Cook Inlet pretrial booking expansion. You say you've got to expand and renovate the booking area, et cetera, so that you can close 6th Avenue. My understanding was that your present proposal is not to close 6th Avenue. Could you clarify, please?
Those projects, I believe you're looking at earlier lists, we did develop if we had $3 million. Since we aren't
proposing, I'm just looking at what you've submitted here as your backup for this item in the capital budget. So if you have an updated item, we'd be happy to see it.
It should be in the handout, the last page. And it would list
right behind, excuse me, right behind you, you can give the explanation.
It would list those three projects. And
move your chair up here.
And the projects we have currently on the list are $350,000 for Meadow Creek, $500,000 for Lemon Creek, and $500,000 for Fairbanks. We are not planning to make modifications at this time at Cook Inlet.
And if I could continue, how do these projects, or do they adequately satisfy the Cleary requirement for female prisoners?
I think that you're, and I understand your question, you'd like to know what has happened on the budget plan that was presented to the House compared to what was presented to the Senate, and why were the modifications to that plan?
Mr. Pruitt, I ask you to identify yourself and move closer to the mic so that we have it on record.
Sure. Thank you. Frank Pruitt, Deputy Commissioner for Department of Corrections. Mr. Co-Chair, if I could respond to the question, I think we could probably get this clarified. The budget reduction plan that we presented to what appears to be the subcommittee on finance here has changed slightly. As you can recall some of my testimony earlier, we said that we thought that we would be, the plan that we arrived at with the House we thought was a viable plan, but we might, but it might require some, I think I said, variations on the theme. Now, when the plan, by the time the plan was presented to the Senate, both the 6th Avenue and the Matsu pretrial facility, which we had planned on with the Senate on closing down, were appearing not to be as viable as we had thought for a couple of reasons. Both of those are pretrial facilities, and the demand on those facilities was such that we began to focus elsewhere. Our concern was in the $7.5 million reduction, we needed to achieve a realistic 7.5, or actually beyond that, so that we could purchase, as you recall, the intermediate sanctions on the other side of the scale. We are still working on the 6th Avenue plan. Right now, we have OMB's efficiency, one of their efficiency people, Rick Barrier, who's testified, and some private sector people in the city. Our expectation is, or I guess our hope, is that we can continue to at least achieve a substantial reduction from 6th Avenue, which may modify this plan once again. Our concern was having a plan that we could come out of July 1 with confidence that we could meet our budget reduction. Part of the problem with the 6th Avenue plan is we do not know at this point whether the city of Anchorage is going to pay any money, the same amount of money, or more money for the city ordinance and misdemeanors. We have not got any response out of Anchorage. Consequently, 6th Avenue, we simply could not, we can't, for the purposes of this plan, count on 6th Avenue. If we can achieve those reductions, then we can offset some of the reconfigurations that we've come up with here. Is that helpful? Now, on Matsu, under pressure from public safety because of the pressure on Matsu, we've backed off that plan, we're still looking at about a $500,000 reduction in staff at MATSU to accommodate the pretrial. The shift in focus to the Wildwood Correctional Center was in part at the suggestion of our master planners, who have identified the Wildwood pretrial facility as being one of the most viable facilities for core expansion and future accommodation of inmate growth. Our difficulty is, you know, we only have four sentenced facilities. The pretrial facilities are tough facilities to get reductions out of because the demand on them from law enforcement is so high. Our four sentence facilities are Highland Mountain, which is our sex offender treatment program, and our women's facility, our Spring Creek Correctional Center, which is our only maximum security, Palmer Medium, and Wildwood. So we were left basically with Wildwood or Palmer, one of those facilities, and the recommendation of the planners was to focus on Wildwood for that core expansion. That's why it was modified. So I was talking with Representative Barnes, is that I don't see this plan in, I felt that this plan in spirit that we submitted to the Senate was exactly what the House had intended. It was achieving our budget reduction and saving the $1.7 million that we wanted for intermediate sanctions. But I always reminded people that there could be variations, and I think there could still be variations. We're still at the table on 6th Avenue, and if we can get that reduction on 6th Avenue, we can soften some of the blow in some of these other areas that might not be as desirable. Does that help?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's fair to point out that if memory serves me correctly, we're paying, as the state, about $5 million a year to keep 6th Avenue open, although we don't own it.
It's 3.6, I believe, is the total budget, and the city's been paying 1.4.
But are they paying that 1.4 just in giving you free rent? They're not really transferring any dollars to you, is that correct?
If I could rely on our director to help me with that.
So, then, do you pay rent for...
No, my understanding is that our lease is a dollar a year, and as you said...
So what you do then is provide the personnel.
That's correct.
The municipality and...
We provide for the care and custody of city ordinance and city misdemeanor prison for the booking and incarceration, and the city pays us $1.4 million.
And it cost us how much?
That facility is 3.6, I believe.
So they give us 1.4, costs us 3.6, so it's costing us 2.2 to house Anchorage's misdemeanor
right.
offenders. So I feel like I've already been beat up enough over this, right? And so I want to get this all, I'm willing to take my lumps. And if I've already taken my lumps, I think taking them once is enough. So I don't want you to lead them up to think that we've got $2.2 million to keep Anchorage 6th Avenue open when we've got Cook Inlet pretrial sitting down there, where you can go to double bumpkin and doing the things that you need to do. And I feel like that everybody has to step up to the plate and take their fair share of the cuts. And I don't expect Kenai to take cuts for me. And I expect Palmer to step up to the plate and take their share of the cuts. I hope I'm getting my message across. Because I know that there are people that are real upset that jails in their communities are going to be closed. First, nobody wants them. But then when they get them, nobody wants to give them up. Because all of a sudden, you're talking about removing some state employees from their communities or jobs from their communities. And I understand how upset and angry my community is. I've been accused, one of the toughest law and order people ever been in this legislature, of putting crooks out on the street. And I don't think we did that at all, or that we even suggested that that happen. And I just don't want to see games played with our corrections proposal, because I feel very strongly that this corrections subcommittee has worked harder than any other subcommittee and probably knows just about as much as about the Department of Corrections as you do, because some of us have served on this committee a long time. I don't want Representative Navarre or Kenai to have to take a bigger cut than they should have to because of my community. And when this corrections plan is being worked through to its final end, I want it to be done in that vein.
I could respond. We've appreciated the work of the House Subcommittee and this body. If there was an error on the part of the department, it was in our failure to come back and talk with you folks as the problems were beginning to arise with the plan. I might mention with Cook Inlet another problem with the plan that we presented to the House. As you recall, we had talked about moving Mike Mod to the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. We received a resolution from the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Division of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities saying that that is not an option available to the department. So there were several things that have caused us to go back to the drawing board on this. If what I am hearing is that you would want to be kept abreast of these plans as they're evolving and as we run into problems, I don't have a problem with that. The House has been most cooperative, and I think we can maintain the integrity and the spirit of this plan.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow up on the Mike Mod. I believe that mental health services in this state and the Mental Health Board derives their legitimacy from this legislature, and that if we direct that the Mike Mod will transfer, that's within our prerogative. We're the ones that own, we the state, the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. And prior to us having the Mike Mod, all those prisoners were treated there. And I think for them to say that it affects the Cleary decision is a big bunch of bull. I don't in any way think that just because people sit around and dream up something that makes it right. And I'm a big believer in doing what's right. And I really don't care whether somebody sent you a letter or not. What I care about and care a lot about is about people keeping their word and about everybody stepping up to the plate and taking their fair share when we have not the money to fund everything. And if we have to transfer prisoners back over to the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, we had a wing for them there. And just because people say we don't want them anymore doesn't make the wing go away. It's there. And I do know that the Commissioner of Health and Social Services was working with you. And again, I don't really care whether people say it doesn't meet the Cleary, because who are they to say it doesn't meet Cleary? I don't think you're going to find anywhere but transferring people back to Alaska Psychiatric Institute that it doesn't meet Cleary. So I feel really strongly that we have to have fairness in this process. And that's the message I want to deliver to you. And if it were the Mental Health Board sitting there, and I know a lot about the mental health system in this state because I was one of the founders way back when we had two employees of South Central Counseling Center. And now there's well in excess of 100. So I just want to make it real clear to you, just because somebody says we don't want to doesn't mean that that's not what should be done. And I expect you to do the right thing.
I'd just further add to that I would like to be kept abreast of what's going on. I get calls from my district and tell them that, no, that's not what's happening, because information has been withheld from me regarding an update on what I thought originally was the plan, so that if there's information that's available that is public information, meaning that if anyone has it or anyone else has seen, I'd like to have this finance committee involved also.
Representative Barr, I guess for the record, I think the department owes you an apology, and I'm offering that. There was a major shift in this plan, and that was our error. I would like to say that I don't think that this body has encountered a department that has taken its budget reduction any more seriously, any more open and candidly, and any more cooperative in terms of a joint. And it's tough, and we're taking that 7-5 serious. So when things happen, like the Mike Mod problem in Sixth Avenue, I have to look at the realities that sometimes things get torpedoed, and I need a plan that I can implement July 1 that I know is certain. So our marching orders to our planners was come up with an alternative that we can do without relying on any other agency, without relying on any enabling legislation, because we have to meet this reduction. That was the plan that's been presented. But this isn't in concrete, and I guess I can give you the commitment that as this evolves, I can certainly keep all of you informed and would ask for your advice.
Thank you. With respect to 6th Avenue, I ran into Police Chief O'Leary over this past weekend, and he said that the city is willing to pay substantially more. I think he said $1 million more. And he also said that you guys never talked to him and that we've been told there are negotiations going on, but there really aren't any, and nobody talks to him, and he's not involved. And, you know, I'm just wondering, who is negotiating for the Department of Corrections? One question. Secondly, what are you seeking from the city of Anchorage with respect to the care of those prisoners? And is there some magic number they have to come up with in order to maintain the status quo, or have you offered them some other deal to keep these people at Cook Inlet pretrial, or what is this exact status of what's going on there?
Response to your first question, my friend the chief is incorrect. He and I talked about this, and he is my friend, and we have talked about this, and we wouldn't have presented it to the House if we hadn't thought that we were going to be able to work out an arrangement with the private sector to reduce costs. Unfortunately, what I experienced was that Anchorage Police Department was not talking with the mayor's office, and perhaps I should have been doing that for whatever reasons. At this point, Rick Barrier and Mr. Crawford seems to be holding the keys to the problem right now. Chief O'Leary stating that the city's willing to pay that much, at least as much as they've been paying or more, is news to me, because what I've heard as recent as this morning when I've asked the question is that the city's position is they will not make a commitment to us on what they will pay until they know how they fare with the legislature as a whole in terms of their monies. So if the city's willing to pay, I would like to know it so we can get on with the plan. In terms of what we are planning on doing, it's fairly complicated. This is very nearly unprecedented, and we do have there's a group called IARCA, which is our Alaska Association of Community and Residential Centers. We're working very closely with that entity, talking about the complexities of a booking operation. Booking isn't just taking people in and filling out forms. You have people who are grossly intoxicated. We have people who have hung themselves. We have people who are in serious medical. We want to make sure that if a private entity is going to take over a booking function, which I don't think is mysterious, by the way, I believe that the private sector could do that. We need to make sure that the state is adequately protected from a liability standpoint and proper medical services. But what we would envision would be a booking function that's fairly limited, for a limited duration, until a person is out of has been booked or they're out of medical danger and then transferred to a CRC. These are city ordinance misdemeanant folk who could be handled in a halfway house bed, and we're hoping that we can pull that together and pull it off.
And then if I could just come back to the question about the women's facilities and the extent to which this current plan before us will comply with Cleary as to treatment of women.
The Cleary document requires the department, as you know, to construct a freestanding facility or utilize existing resources. We believe on the capital side, if we can add these modular, if we can increase the program space, that we'll be able to satisfy the Cleary requirements for female offenders. That combined with the classification modification, where we believe that many of the female offenders will be eligible for a lesser degree of supervision. So we do not believe that we're in danger in Cleary at all with this proposal.
Any further questions and corrections? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
From there, we'll go to University of Alaska.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Brian Rogers, Vice President for Finance for the University System. With me is Jerry Newbert, Executive Director for Facilities Planning and Construction for the University System. We've got a handout which contains the complete Board of Regents capital priority list. Recognizing the time and the size of the funding available, we do not intend to cover all of those items, but would like to cover those in the governor's budget and several other high priorities, and alert the members of the committee to some of the problems that the university faces in its capital budget at the current governor's level. I'd like to begin, Madam Chair, with the five items contained in the governor's capital budget. The first item, repair buildings per code compliance order, $5.2 million. This is a portion of five projects that were detailed in the university's budget request, and that is priorities the Duckering Building code compliance order at $1.5 million, the Greening Building code compliance order at $1.5 million, the Irving Building at $2 million, the Geist Museum at $200,000, the Patty Center at six projects, and the Atkinson Building at $1.3 million. All of these items are items where we have an existing citation by fire marshal or other safety officials that requires us to take action or to, in some cases, shut the building down. We had, as a result of a legislative audit several years ago, a very aggressive inspection program by the state fire marshal in Fairbanks, which led to that. And as we look through this building, I can tell you, to give you a sense of the scale, the kinds of violations they've been finding in university buildings would cost you about $5 million for the building we're in to comply with the violations. And getting down toward the tail end of a long series. We started with fixing the dormitories, where we had buildings where students were sleeping. These tend to be the office and laboratory buildings, but we have had to focus all of our top capital budget efforts at these code compliance, allowing other deferred maintenance and other high priorities to fall further behind. In addition to the code compliance, the governor's budget includes part of the remaining funding for completing the John Butcherich Building, which is the headquarters of the statewide offices in Fairbanks. The money in this budget would complete the basement level for use as a supercomputer center and is tied to a $25 million federal project in the current federal fiscal year budget. We need to prepare the basement level to hold that supercomputer setup and the related visualization laboratories, potentially a second small supercomputer. The third project is the completion of the classroom laboratory building at UAA. This building is close to nearing completion. This would finish the UAA class lab building. The $320,000 for the MAPS fire training site was not in the university's original request. We received an appropriation last year for the cleanup, and we have discovered substantially more toxic materials as the hydrocarbons as the site is being cleaned up. That cleanup is in progress. We have some photos in more detail if there's particular interest in that project. Finally, we have in the governor's budget $200,000 in matching funds for the Lucy Cuddy Center. We have private funds to match that for improvements to that center. On the other items, I'd like to focus on six major areas of university capital that are problems for us at the governor's capital budget level. The first is that the code compliance amount included in the governor's budget does not meet the existing code citations and is short by about $4.5 million. These codes, there are several additional building code compliance. There is also the large animal research station, also known as the Muskox Farm at the UAF campus, is in violation of the corralling of the animals, and we have had significant problems there and might have to close that if we are not able to get the fence corrected as noted here. In the Anchorage area, we have a land purchase that's an agreement with the municipality of Anchorage, a final payment on that land purchase of $1.6 million. And that purchase needs to be completed this year under our agreement with the municipality. The legislature has been making payments the last 2 years on that purchase.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Do we lose our money prior investment if that is not completed?
That's correct.
Do you know how much we've put into it thus far?
$1.8 million to date. The next two items, we have two additional major classroom and laboratory buildings. The UAF Natural Sciences building is currently out to bid. We are requesting the final installment on that of $4.5 million. However, given the sequencing of this project, our requirement would be about $2.7 million this year. The remainder next year could be covered in order to keep that facility on track. We have a building. Yesterday, the Board of Regents approved the schematic design for the UAS classroom building. It's an addition to the UAS library, a magnificent facility in terms of being able to meet the classroom needs of the University of Alaska Southeast. It has some special distance delivery capabilities and large lecture hall, which I think would be a very valuable addition to the Juno campus. The major item that has only been partially funded in recent years is the deferred maintenance backlog at the university. And what we are requesting is a total system-wide of $25 million, which would represent the first year of a five-year plan to eliminate all of the deferred maintenance at the university, which is now estimated at slightly over $125 million. The specific projects are detailed and fall into a couple of major themes. First, the dormitory. We have additional deferred maintenance in the dormitories, again, primarily at UAF, because that's where the facilities are the oldest. Second, the library fine arts theater complex with about $3 million, a series of roof upgrades. We have security, fire alarm, electrical systems at quite a number of the UAA buildings and UAF buildings. and then a series of those, and we can provide detail on the deferred maintenance. The final area I'd like to cover an overview is the area of information systems, and that is an area that there's been very little capital money for the university in recent years, and we have significant needs both in the instructional area and in the administrative area for information systems. We're looking at an upgrade to the mainframe capacity of the IBM 3090 at the university. We have the next installment of the upgrade of the library circulation system and a software improvement, a better financial information system, all high on the priority list. But there are a series of other improvements. The University of Alaska Southeast, for example, needs upgrade of its VAX computer, the academic computer, and virtually every department at the university is in need of instructional or research equipment. Madam Chair, I think that covers the basic overview. I'd be glad to provide details on any of the individual projects. I recognize the hour is late, and we do have detailed information. The first page of the handout is a summary of the top third of the priorities. The next two pages cover the detailed priorities of the Board of Regents.
Co-Chairman Navarre.
How do the deferred maintenance and the code compliance, which I presume is also deferred maintenance, how do they get behind the even the completion of the buildings that are partially constructed? I mean, where are the priorities? Is deferred maintenance the highest priority, or are these other things the highest priority? Because I can tell you what it does to me is it takes away from the credibility of people coming down here and arguing for deferred maintenance if there's other things ahead of it on the list.
Through the chair, the code compliance is generally not a deferred maintenance item. Those are items where the codes have changed and do require modifications. A portion of that will occasionally be the result of deferred maintenance, but in large part is not. The board's decision in prioritizing in part recognized regional balance in the board's capital budget. Since the bulk of deferred maintenance is at the Fairbanks campus, the placement of all deferred maintenance at the top of the budget severely regionally imbalances the university's request if we're looking at drawing a line at some point. So what you see is the top group are those code compliance, which add up to nearly $10 million for the Fairbanks campus, and then a recognition that there are needs elsewhere in the state and that we cannot displace the needs of Anchorage and of Juneau by placing all the deferred maintenance at the top. If you look at the campus, look at it as a regional priority within Fairbanks, the top group is the code compliance. The next group is an investment, the $5 million to get $25 million worth of federal funds for the supercomputer. Then comes the completion of a building which is underway and the deferred maintenance. So there is no question that there are several ways and several different priorities depending on the group that you talk to. The board, in trying to prioritize this, has always tried to recognize some regional balance so that the legislature can draw the line at any point and have some fairness among the system components.
I recognize the balance that we're trying to strike here. And in fact, in the operating budget, I push for a little better balance a lot of the time. But the fact of the matter is that the Fairbanks campus has significant deferred problems.
Absolutely.
And there is no way to geographically balance that. On this list at least, UAS deferred maintenance backlog is ahead of UAF. deferred maintenance backlog. Student residential units in Anchorage are ahead of UAF deferred maintenance backlog. I have to tell you, it just makes no sense. Geographic balance or not, it makes no sense.
Representative Brown?
I was willing to help you guys with deferred maintenance, too.
Who?
The university. But I can't support this prioritization of the list. The Board of Regents is doing the same thing the legislature does. The Board of Regents is not elected. They're appointed. Tell them to step up to the plate and make some policy decisions instead of political decisions, if you would, for me. Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about the Butcherovich building completion. What's the likelihood we're actually going to get this supercomputer from Congress? And secondly, if we get it, and if we spend the $5 million to finish this basement to house it, will that computer provide the capability to support a variety of activities, both at the university and, for example, the education network that the university has been instrumental in helping provide the backbone for so far? I'm just wondering, is this a special deal that just sits here and does one particular type of thing, or will the university have the ability to use the resources of that computer to serve the whole state?
Through the chair, the likelihood is very high. The Congress has appropriated the funds. We have had meetings with the Department of Defense Waterways Group, who actually will be transferring the money to the university. We have a group coming up next week to survey the facility and to begin the negotiations as to exactly what requirements they will place on us. So